Chapter 37. Revision.
Amongst all the genres on Fiction Island, comedy is the only one that still demands compulsory military service and a bucket of water down the trousers for every citizen. Conscripts are trained in the clown martial art of slapstick and do not graduate from military academy until they can kill silently with a frying pan and achieve fatal accuracy with a custard pie at 40 yards. It's a bit like Sparta, only with jokes.
Bradshaw's Bookworld Companion, 7th edition. We convened in the bar soon afterwards and related everything we had seen at the middle station. Colonel Barksdale, Herring, Jacques, and Senator Jobsworth listened carefully to all we had to say, but didn't seem to have any better idea of what was going on than we did.
"There is no reason for the 14th motorized clown to be this far north," declared Colonel Barksdale angrily. "It is a flagrant breach of numerous peace agreements, and specifically the 1996 Clown Army Proliferation Treaty."
"Shouldn't you have known about it?" asked Emperor Jacques, who knew better than most the value of intelligence.
"The textual sieve network is patchy up here," replied Barksdale in a sulky tone. "We can't know everything. I can only think that the 14th clown must have been massing in the demilitarized zone as the potential allies of Racy Novel."
"Who killed them and all the civilians?" asked the adventurer, to which question there didn't seem to be much of an answer. They all fell silent for a moment.
"When do we meet with the other delegates?" asked Jobsworth.
"In an hour," replied Herring. "Aunt Augusta of Wumfick and Cardinal Fang of outdated religious dogma are meeting us at Fanny Hill. Would you excuse me? We're out of footnote or phone range, and I'm going to have to send a message to the council via the shortwave colophone."
Drake and I were dismissed, as Jobsworth, Barksdale, and Jacques had decided to discuss the finer points of the peace talks, something to which we could not be privy.
"I'm going to freshen up before we get there," said Drake, "and maybe rub on some crocodile repellent."
I laughed, saw he was serious, turned the laugh into a cough, and said, "Good idea." We were now well within Racy Novel, and the rustling of bushes, the groans and squeaks of delight echoed in from the river banks, where large privet hedges were grown to afford some sort of privacy for the residents. Every now and then a slip in the river bank allowed us a brief glimpse of what went on, which was generally several scantily dressed people running around in a gleeful manner, usually in a bedroom somewhere, but occasionally in the outdoors, and once on the top deck of a London bus. I made my way forward, where I was met by Sprocket, who beckoned me into a laundry cupboard.
"I took the opportunity to go through the mysterious passenger's belongings, ma'am."
"And?"
"I came across some shoulder pads, knee pads, a chest protector, and a gallon of fire retardant."
"What?"
"Shoulder pads? I heard.
It just doesn't make any sense."
"What doesn't?"
"All of it, from beginning to end. We reach Fanny Hill in half an hour, and the peace talks begin as soon as we are escorted to Pornucopia. It's time to go over what we found. I feel the answer is staring me in the face."
"Shouldn't we gather all the suspects in the bar?" asked Sprocket,
who was fast becoming infected by the metaphoric Queen's capacity for narrative formulaicism.
"No.
And another thing." I was interrupted by a cry from outside, and the engine went to slow ahead. We stepped out of the laundry cupboard to see several crewmen run past, and we followed them to the upper rear deck, from where we could see across the top of the stern wheel. Behind us, in midstream, was a figure in one of the riverboat's four-man tenders. The man was rowing in a measured pace away from the boat, and given our forward speed, the distance between the two crafts was rapidly increasing.
"Who is it?" asked Herring.
"It looks like the mysterious passenger from Cabin 12, replied Drake, who had a small telescope, as befits an adventurer.
"He's even taken his luggage with him."
"What's the meaning of this?"
asked Jobsworth, who had just arrived. Herring explained, and Jobsworth looked at all of us in turn.
"Let me see."
He peered through the telescope for a moment.
"He's taken his luggage with him."
"That's what I said," remarked Drake.
"Mr. Herring," said Jobsworth, "what's going on here?"
"I've no idea, Senator."
"Advice?"
"Carry on?"
"Sounds good to me. Captain?"
"Sir?"
"Carry on."
But the captain, long a riverman, knew more of the perils that can be found on the Metaphoric.
"We can't leave him out here, sir. The forests are full of sirens, eager to... well, how can I put it? He'll be captured and made to... listen, he'll be killed."
"Will it be quick?"
"No. It will be long and very drawn out. He might enjoy it to begin with, but he will eventually be discarded, a shriveled husk of a man devoid of any clothes, humanity, or moisture."
But the Senator was made of sterner stuff.
"This mission is too important to delay, Captain. The mysterious passenger, formerly of Cabin 12, will have to remain exactly that. In every campaign there are always casualties. Full ahead."
"Yes, sir." And they all walked away. The engines ran up to full speed again, and after a few more minutes the small boat was lost to view behind an overhanging tree on a bend in the river.
"I guess that's what mysterious passengers do," said Drake with a shrug. "Be mysterious. Drink?"
"I'll see you down there," I replied. "I must admonish this bar steward for the lamentable lack of quality in his Tahiti tingle." Drake nodded and moved off, and Sprocket and I sat on the curved bench on the upper rear deck to discuss recent events. From the Epizeuxis to the minefield to the men in plaid to Sir Charles Lyell and the bed sitting room.
"What had Thursday discovered that was so devastating to the peace process?" asked Sprocket.
"I don't know. I wish to Panjandrum I were more like her." I took the sketch I had found in Sir Charles's office out of my pocket. It was a map of Racy Novel, with Wumfick to one side and Dogma on the other. There was a shaded patch the shape of a tailless salmon that was mostly beneath Racy Novel. As I stared at the picture, I felt a sudden flush of new intelligence, as though a jigsaw had been thrown into the air and landed fully completed. Everything that had happened to me over the past few days had been inexorably pointing me in one direction. But up until now, I'd been too slow or stupid to be able to sift the relevant facts from the herrings. "By all the spell-checkers of Isogfusuf," I said, pointing at Lyle's sketch. "It's metaphor. A trillion tons of the stuff waiting to be mined, lying beneath our feet."
"Yes," said Sprocket, his eyebrow pointing at Doubtful.
"That's what Lyle and Thursday had discovered," I said excitedly. "It's as Drake said. Whoever controls the supply of metaphor controls fiction."
"If so," said Sprocket carefully, "Racy Novel would be sending more metaphor downriver than anyone else, and they're not."
I thought about this for a moment. Maybe Speedy Muffler isn't bad at all. Perhaps he's defending the metaphor against greedy genres intent on mining it to exhaustion. Metaphor should be controlled. A glut on the market would make fiction overtly highbrow, painfully ambiguous, and potentially unreadable. The new star on the horizon would be the elephant in the room that might lead the book world into a long winter's night.
"That would be frightful," replied Sprocket, recoiling in terror, as the over-metaphorication hit him like a hammer. "But how does that explain the 14th clown's destruction, or even who's responsible for all this?"
"I don't know," I said, "but Senator Jobsworth needs to hear about it." I jumped up and ran down the companionway to the captain's cabin, nearly colliding with Red Herring on the way.
"Sorry," he said, "I'm just going to find a doughnut. Do you want one?"
"No, thank you, sir."
I found Senator Jobsworth discussing the talks with Emperor Jacques and Colonel Barksdale.
"Have you seen Herring?" asked Jobsworth. "He should really be going through the final details with us."
"He went to get a doughnut."
"He did? Leave us now. We're very busy."
"I have important information. I think I know why Thursday was assassinated." Jobsworth stared at me.
"Thursday's dead."
"Well, no, because her imagination is still alive. It was an assassination attempt in a crummy book written by Adrian Dorset."
"Adrian Dorset?"
"Jack shit, if you must. It was the Epizeuxis that got her, and mediocre."
"Who's mediocre?"
"Gatsby."
"He's anything but mediocre, my girl."
And both he and Jacques laughed in a patronizing sort of way. "Seriously," I said hotly. "Thursday was attacked, and the reason..."
"Whatever it is, I'm sure it's fascinating," said Jobsworth. "But it's going to have to wait. We enter the subgenre racy classics in 5 minutes, and meet with the other delegates in 45. We have much work to do. If you really want to be helpful, make me a cup of tea, or go find Herring.
But
go!"
I mumbled an apology and backed out the door, cursing my own weakness.
"That could have gone better," said Sprocket. "I'll try to find Herring for you."
And with a mild buzz, he disappeared. I walked down to the lower deck, feeling hot and frustrated. I didn't like to be talked to that way, but this could indeed wait. I'd leave it until Jobsworth had a quieter moment, and then tell him. Or perhaps speak to Speedy Muffler's people in private, and see if my suspicions were correct. Perhaps it was better not to talk to Jobsworth. I went down to my cabin to wash my face, but stopped at cabin 12, next door to mine. The mysterious passenger's escape from the steamer still made no sense, so I pushed open the door and went in. The bed was made up, as I might have suspected. We weren't due to return until tomorrow. I searched through the missing passenger's baggage and found none of the shoulder or knee pads that Sprocket had described, although the fire retardant was still there, unopened. There was a change of clothes and nothing else. I was about to close the door when I remembered. The mysterious passenger had his luggage with him when we saw him rowing away. A flurry of unpleasant thoughts went through my head, and I suddenly realized not only why the mysterious passenger would have knee pads, but who had attacked the 14th clown, and what was going on in the Outland that made the whole thing possible. This was a complex plot of considerable dimension, and I was now certain who was behind it all. My first thought was to go and tell Jobsworth exactly what was happening. But I stopped, as a far worse realization dawned upon me. The plan would work only if everyone on board the Metaphoric Queen were to be assassinated. I grabbed a fire axe and ran up the companionway to the deck.